Welcome to The Urban Complex, a system of interrelated, emotion-charged ideas, feelings, memories, and impulses. This name takes the definition and lays out what a listener should expect. A podcast where ideas, feelings, and memories collide, leading towards meaningful change. I'm co-host Chris Richardson. Please enjoy the journey with The Urban Complex. Smarter cities for a stronger tomorrow.
Welcome to The Urban Complex. All opinions by Chris Richardson, Dominic Papa, and podcast guests are solely their own opinions and do not reflect the opinions of Arizona State University or Amazon Web Services. This podcast is for informational purposes only and should not be relied upon for any decisions. Any endorsement of or messages from sponsors are solely supporting the production of this podcast. There is no further relationship with the podcast purposes than the sponsors unless separately created with another entity. Enjoy The Urban Complex. Smarter cities for a stronger tomorrow.
Hey, Chris, what's going on, man? Another week. How you doing? What's top of mind for you?
Well, I'll say what's really on my mind is literally while we were recording, preparing to record the show. I mean, I just closed the deed on a new house, so I am going to be moving. So I know I'm going to be asking you to come over and move this 400-pound beast again. You ready? He dropped.
Yes.
I don't want that huge 6-inch bruise on my leg again from wrestling. I actually hired.
Oh my gosh! I'm gonna start taking Advil right now. Just thinking about it, it's making my back hurt. Oh Lord.
How about you? After the initial shock of thinking about that again, what's on your mind?
Oh yeah. Well, now that I'm sweating, thinking about lifting that 7 million pound thing. No, I'm excited. You know, we're having a big event tonight. It's called the State of Digital Equity in Arizona Charity Dinner. It's the first time ever a group of leaders from across government, industry, and academia slash education have come together to really discuss the state of digital equity and inclusion in Arizona. It's really going to be a wonderful event. When I got the job at AWS, handed over the reins to Aaron Carr Jordan to become the director of that Digital Equity Institute. So we're excited. We've got Angela Seifer coming, who's the executive director for the National Digital Inclusion Alliance. We actually have Angela Bennett as well, who just became the first ever digital equity director at the federal level, who is the digital equity director for the NTIA under the Department of Commerce coming from DC. So it's just going to be a great event. And it's meant to raise awareness and, of course, raise money to help support underserved, unserved students in Arizona. So really excited about it.
Well, and that reminds me, we're going to have to hustle up and get changed. Are you going to be wearing blue, matching blue suits tonight?
Blue's the color of the institute, so let's do it.
Right on. I'll see you there.
Awesome. So our guest this week, who do we have?
So we have a great one in a different field than we've talked before. We have Jeff Goldner, and he's the CEO of APS, or Arizona Public Service. So first kind of utility-focused presentation should be really insightful.
Yeah, awesome. I mean, throughout my time in economic development in Arizona, I've heard nothing but amazing things about Jeff and the way he's brought an innovation mindset into utility, which is not common. And of course, I'm really interested in this because every time you're at Smart City conferences, it's all about where's the utilities? Why aren't the utilities at these conferences with these cities? And so I'm really interested to see the dynamic between a utility and the relationships with the cities and other partners.
Yeah, we owe a big thanks to Greater Phoenix Economic Council, our partner on the show, to getting Jeff. So should we get him on?
Yeah, let's bring him in. Here we go.
Support for this episode of The Urban Complex comes from Worldwide Technology.
What if we could connect people to new possibilities, turn thinking into a way forward, solve problems before they become a problem, and share the future with everyone? We can. At WWT, we connect businesses to technology to make the impossible possible, to reach better decisions faster, to accelerate progress. Together, let's make a new world happen.
Jeff, please let Dom and I give you a warm welcome to our podcast, The Urban Complex. Thanks for joining us.
Hey, guys. Thanks for having me.
You bet.
Well, we found the best way to build quick rapport with our guests is just have them talk a little bit about you and explain a little bit about your background. What do you want them to know as a person, how you got to where you are, and definitely we'll get to the APS side of things soon. So I want you to warm up there.
Yeah, sure. I was born here in the Western U.S., but I actually grew up outside of Toronto, Ontario, Canada. came back to do college in the U.S. and joined the Navy after that. And so I actually spent about 6 years on active duty as a naval officer. And one of the most interesting parts of that was 3 years stationed in Japan.
Wow.
So it was right outside of Nagasaki, Japan.
Oh, wow.
Completely different culture. Very eye-opening in terms of just getting a, you know, different perspective on the world. Came, left the Navy to go to law school at ASU, so go Devils.
Right.
And then went into private practice here in the Phoenix area at Snell and Wilmer. Joined APS in a non-legal role from Snell and Wilmer, and then just took a number of different paths here. Never expected to be CEO when I joined. I didn't join in the legal side, and so it's just been a real honor to be able to take this title.
Unfortunately, you keep your poor lawyers on check because you know their job. All right. That's great. So what should the audience know about Arizona Public Service, APS? Again, this is a national podcast. Yeah. And your role as CEO.
Yeah, it's a really cool company with really great people in it and an incredibly rich history. I mean, we were actually founded, the predecessor company you can trace back to 1886.
Oh, wow.
And we started out providing a street lighting service to, I'm sure, a much smaller downtown Phoenix service territory. And then just over the years, through consolidations and growth and things like that, we now serve 11 of 15 of Arizona's counties. So all the way from the Grand Canyon in the northwestern part of the state, Flagstaff, Tombstone, half of Metro Phoenix, and then all the way down to Yuma and Douglas and Bisbee in the southern part of the state. What's interesting about that is that means that we've got some of the densest service territory, a typical urban electric utility serving about half of Metro Phoenix, but then some of the sparsest service territory with very few customers per square mile when you get up into the very northern parts of the state. We operate the nation's largest clean energy power plant, the Palo Verde Generating Station, which is just to the west of Phoenix, and that actually serves customers from California over to El Paso, Texas. And from a people standpoint, we adopted a clean energy commitment a few years ago, which is taking us to 0% carbon by 2050. And a cultural change along that, and it was two parts. One was really to drive a growth mindset in our employees. So focus on the growth mindset. Nobody knows how to get to zero right now, but that's okay. We can commit to it. We're going to figure it out along the way. So we moved there, and then we adopted the APS promise. And it's really centered around stewardship. And so we say, as stewards of Arizona, we do what's right for the people and prosperity of the state. And so that's our focus every day when we come into work, to serve our customers and to serve our state.
You mean utilities aren't synonymous with growth mindset? I love it. Like, this is going to be a great story to kind of hear how you did that, if you can weave that in, because I think that's really critical. I'm glad, sure. Glad you started with that.
Yeah, this is awesome. And I know, Jeff, we're going to really dig into that clean energy goal. But before we do, let's back up just a little bit. So this is a podcast, you know, about smart cities. So we like to have a little fun with our guests and ask them what their view, what their definition of smart cities are, because we know, look, there's not really one true answer. So it's really been fun to get the people and our guests' perspective of what they think is a smart city. So we'd love for you to tell our audience, you know, what's your view of smart cities? What's working? What's not working? And how are you bringing that mindset into your work at APS? You know, let's think broadly for now, and then we'll dig a little bit deeper into the finer details soon.
Yeah, sure. So, you know, first, I would step back and just say, you know, recognize cities are systems.
Mm.
They're very complex systems. You know, our power grid is a complex system, but cities themselves are complex systems. And they're really overlapping networks. Wow. Even to the point of think we have overlapping networks of drugstores, overlapping networks of grocery stores, overlapping networks of roads, overlapping networks of sewage and water systems and electric systems. And in a lot of cases, those networks are getting a lot smarter. And that's one of the things I think is important about this progress to smart city. And I think in most cases, it's largely invisible to the residents of the cities. And if you step back and just think on your drive to work, the difference that it's made in having streetlights that are adaptable. And so if there's no one in the left turn lane, the left turn lane signal isn't going to go, and you've got a whole line of cars that will be able to get on their way faster. Time traffic lights, nobody probably even realizes that those are a thing, but you know, the city's optimizing time traffic lights. And so to me, what's really interesting about thinking about evolution of smart cities is how passive they can be. And I think it's really well done. A smart city is going to be largely invisible to the consumers or the residents that enjoy the services of that city, but it will bring benefits to them. Again, they may not know that they're there, but they're going to feel them. If I had to wait every time there was no car going the other way, right now my frustration level would build, because I know that we should be able to manage that in a smarter way. So I think there's a lot of stuff happening that is working. There's certainly a lot more that we can do. And when we think about energy systems and the data, I think what we're not doing well right now is integrating the data that's available across multiple cities. There's a tremendous amount of collaboration between the cities here in Arizona and the Phoenix area in a way that's probably unique in the country. The mayors work remarkably well together. But figuring out how we could get better integration of data across that. If I live in Chandler and I commute into downtown Phoenix, you know, is there information that could be of value to the broader region?
Yeah, that's awesome. That's a brilliant perspective. I love that idea of thinking of it as a system of systems, because you're exactly right. And you're not the first guest that has mentioned, you know, a smart city is one that the citizens and residents and businesses don't realize is smart. So I love that perspective. So let's dive a little bit deeper. And you did mention kind of the broadness of smart cities. Now, how do you look at innovation as a company with APS? And in particular, as you mentioned, there's so much out there that we can improve on. How do you stay on top of the latest changes around the world for bringing what makes sense to APS and, you know, your customers throughout Arizona?
Yeah, there's a tremendous amount of this that is just based on collaboration. In the electric utility business, we're fortunate. We've got a great trade association called the Edison Electric Institute. They actually run a project called the Institute for Electric Innovation, which is really focused on the customer-facing innovations that are happening. So I kind of routinely, and my team gets to routinely talk to our counterparts at Pepco, which serves Washington, D.C., with Xcel Public Service Colorado serving Denver, with the California utilities, with PG&E doing a lot with technology in the Bay Area. And so we're able to use that collaboration to really share. One of the things, though, is you've got to be very careful you don't get grounded in kind of the utility mindset and say, you know, we know what we can solve and what our lanes are. And so that collaboration has to expand beyond just the utility footprint to say, how are we working with our customers, for example. I've had fascinating conversations with some of our commercial customers who are thinking about how they want to use AI to manage their air conditioning loads or their cooling loads in the case of like grocery store chains that operate a lot of refrigeration, you know, and is there a way that they can optimize with our network so that, you know, they're doing it in a way that kind of optimizes the power prices that we're seeing in the wholesale market that we're ultimately in cases buying from. And so that customer collaboration is really key. You know, I mentioned the growth mindset. Part of our growth mindset journey has been to really focus on listening. And listening with the aim of problem solving things together. And, you know, I'd say a typical utility a few years ago, I'm not saying that we were included in this, but we might have been, was a little bit more like, we know what we're doing and we know how to get it done and we want your input, but we really don't. We just want to get some engagement and then we'll go do what we know is the right answer. And I love this concept of I'd rather invite you to my problem. So I'd rather invite a group of stakeholders and say, look, here's the problem that I've got. Can you bring me kind of any ideas, solutions, opportunities? And that's one of the things we've actually done is we've pivoted how we do our power procurement into what's called an all source procurement, where we go say, look, this is the energy profile we're trying to solve for. Instead of saying, I know that's a diesel gas, or not diesel, but a natural gas generator. And so bid me the best natural gas generators you have. You just say, here's the power profile I need. And you may get a gas generator, and then you may get a solar and battery storage combination. And that's called an all source RFP process. And so we basically said, we're going to just tell you our problem. And then we'd like to hear your ideas for a solution. And then let's figure out how we can collaborate and scale that across more than just power procurement, scale it across customer solutions and, you know, rate design, things like that.
Well, yeah, that's an excellent approach. I love this idea. And we've been preaching this idea for a long time as, you know, collaboration is the next competitive advantage. And, you know, those organizations, those institutions that can collaborate will really be propelled to that forefront of technology innovation. So I love that approach. You know, Jeff, a lot of times the smart city movements are really grounded for mayors, for city managers. They're really grounded in economic development, right? How are we going to bring companies, employees to the state? How are we going to attract these individuals here through a lens of smart cities? And we've discussed with people like Chris Camacho as guests on his podcast before, but we've never really discussed kind of smart cities, economic development and growth from the lens of a power company. Talk to our listeners, our audience, because, you know, in a lot of the smart cities conferences, they always tend to talk, the one person missing at the table is utilities. So what role does APS play in attracting growth to the state, and how has the success and growth of Maricopa County and Arizona in general as a whole really impacted you in terms of kind of increased electric demand or actually just increased innovation as a whole?
Yeah, it's a great point. And you know, you mentioned it is really all about collaboration. We've got a great relationship with all the mayors. You know, you mentioned Chris. Chris is great. Sandra Watson at the Commerce Authority is truly superb Secretary of Commerce. And so when we all work together, and interestingly here, we also work pretty closely with the other utilities in the state. You know, so we serve Phoenix with both us and Salt River Projects. So there's a little bit of competition for sure between, you know, is this project going to go in their territory or in our territory? But you know, one of the things from I think our collective standpoint is just like with the mayors, if you build a manufacturing facility in Goodyear, all of the communities around that manufacturing facility will also benefit because there's going to be growth occurring either in support services or in population or others. And so you really do have to look at the Valley collectively. And we do actually play an important role in that. If you look at Taiwan Semiconductor, which is probably the biggest customer, it's going to be our largest customer ever as it builds out here in the north part of Phoenix. You know, Taiwan Semiconductor was a nationally led collaboration because you had to work at the national level on policy. We then had to work very closely with the Commerce Authority and with others here in Phoenix. We worked with the State Land Department to help secure the land that was there. We worked with that customer on a special rate for them that took advantage of the fact that they're so large and they have some economies of scale. And then working with them on how we can get the infrastructure in place to support the schedule that they have to meet. And so, you know, we're part of a number of different partners that they have to work with very closely, but we have an economic development team here that goes out and works with every one of those customers. Awesome. And I think that's been, you know, there's a lot of magic in Arizona that's bringing some of that growth from other parts of the country and from around the world. But I think you definitely have an important role for the utility to facilitate that. And it's translating. So for us, we have more demand growth, more load growth happening in Arizona than probably in any other service territory in the United States. Presents some challenges. So it's challenging from a resource procurement. It's kind of tight power market right now, but some challenges there, but really good opportunities that a lot of people don't think about. When you bring that growth, you don't only bring tax revenue benefits and additional population and additional services, you can also spread the costs of our system across a bigger footprint.
Correct.
And so think of the fixed costs that we have that no matter how many customers we're going to incur, if we can spread that among more usage, you can actually reduce the cost it is to serve, which is ultimately what gets passed on to customers.
Yep. And before we move, that Taiwan Simi is such a great cross-group collaboration, cross-nation collaboration. And for anyone that isn't aware about it, isn't it equating to about a $40 billion capital investment in the Phoenix Valley? Is that about what they've committed?
Yeah, it's in the between 20 and 40 billion. They've got multiple phases that are right. going out. If you drive up there right now, you know, if listeners in other parts of the country are having trouble finding those tower cranes, that's because
they're all there. I think there's like 62 of them or something.
That's right. It's a forest of tower cranes that are up there, but it really is just a massive, massive project and hugely beneficial for our country. Is, you know, supply chain chip supply issues in the U.S. are such a challenge, and we have a great semiconductor system here in Arizona with Intel and others as well.
Yeah, great points. And I just kind of want to double click on this idea. You mentioned kind of utility, playing that role of a facilitator, convener, you know, helping bring a lot of these partners together at the federal all the way down to the local. You know, we'll be remiss if we didn't ask you for some advice here. A lot of the mayors we talk to around the country are all, you know, obviously looking at the federal stimulus, the infrastructure bill, trying to think how can they bring more of that investment into their communities. And obviously there's, you know, been a strong focus around, you know, clean infrastructure, clean energy technologies. Are you playing any role in helping facilitate these discussions here with the local communities? How might you provide some advice for maybe a mayor in a different state wanting to work with his utility to help attract investment from the federal dollars?
Yeah, I would strongly encourage you to reach out to the utility. Many of us have a lot of experience working with some of the key agencies, not necessarily all of them that are involved in that, but certainly with Department of Energy, with the Department of the Interior, you know, in a lot of cases in Arizona. One of the things that we've done to help, because there are a lot of utility specific things that we could go after, but they make far less sense if you're going after them with just that siloed mindset of doing it for the utility. So what we want to do is, you know, talk, make sure we're coordinating with our Department of Transportation on how we go after the formulaic electric vehicle funding that's out there. But then also, you know, if you look at the summary of what's in the bipartisan infrastructure law, it's about 465 pages of detail. We brought on a consultant who's a former senior DOE official who was in OMB, not just to help us look for the opportunities that are out there, but also to partner with customers and our communities so that we can bring a resource that, you know, if they see something that may not be utility specific to us, but is of interest, that we've got resources that we can help those community partners to pursue federal funding. Because it truly is, this is a remarkable opportunity in our nation's history to pursue that kind of infrastructure investment in our communities.
Awesome. Another amazing opportunity, considering I think we're about 3% penetration of electric vehicles. Tell us a little bit about how APS preparing for the increased adoption of EV and making charging infrastructure more available statewide in your areas.
Yeah, you know, EVs, the electrification of transportation is a major opportunity in the overall decarbonization efforts in the U.S. The electric sector's gone from being the highest carbon emitter to now being the transportation sector. So we know that there's a tremendous amount of opportunity in decarbonizing our economy by pursuing vehicle electrification. And you've really now seen, I think, the bigger OEMs, Ford and GM, much more leaning into the opportunity. So we see, I think, almost like a hockey stick adoption from we got probably 28,000-29,000 EVs in our territory today. We have about 1.1 million residential customers or so. That we expect to go up to the 450,000 range in you know, the next 10, 15, 20 years. And so great opportunities. You have to do the infrastructure for a number of reasons. Even if most people will come home, charge their cars inside, you've got to look from a, I think from an equity standpoint about, well, make sure you don't leave out communities that don't have parking garages. Everybody doesn't have a garage, you know, maybe in multifamily housing. How do we make sure that in our rural communities there's charging infrastructure so that people don't stop going to them because they're range limited? And so we've gotten about 500 level two chargers deployed already in our Take Charge AZ program. We work very closely with community partners. If you go down to Casa Grande City Hall, you'll see some of the chargers that are right outside City Hall. And so we look around the communities in our service territory that can benefit from that. We've got our first ultra fast charging infrastructure up in Sholo.
Awesome.
And so I think you'll see continued deployment of that. That's on the charging side. You know, the other thing that we'll need to deal with is like how that affects the grid and like what can we do to mitigate any negative impacts on the grid.
Well, and that's what I was wondering. How are you seeing that shift? You know, people have been getting their energy by going to the pump and that stays off the grid. How are you seeing, what you mentioned earlier, a lot might be doing it direct from their garage, which is a power source that you provide. Are you seeing that change? Are you seeing the fact that there's a spike when they come home from work and they plug it in, or tell us about that?
Yeah, you there's a couple of different impacts. I guess the biggest challenge that I see, if it was completely uncontrolled, if there was no technology, you know, behind this, the worst case scenario, which we can't really allow to happen, is everybody gets home at 6 p.m. on the hottest day in the summer, plugs their electric vehicle in, even though it's probably got 80% of the charge left, and immediately begins consuming more power from the grid. And on that hottest day in the summer, our peak demand is going to occur at about 7 or 8 o'clock at night. Mm. And so we really need the technology to shift that consumption off into the evening hours, early morning hours, where the power supply is more available. And you may, if you do that right, you can actually more optimize the use of the system and you can use it more efficiently. If we do it wrong and you add thousands of megawatts of new peak demand only in those few summer months, then the only way right now you could really solve it is to go out and build several thousand more megawatts of natural gas plants.
Right.
And so that's the solution we don't want. We want that smart infrastructure to be able to optimize the charging time. And that, and I think the OEMs are all aligned with that. You know, most people don't go home. Our rate design supports putting your car on a smart charger where it will charge later in the evening when power prices are lower. And again, that gives us a more optimal use of the system. So I think we're on the right track with that. You've got to manage it pretty carefully because you don't want that to end up causing higher power demand at a time when, you know, it's just not needed.
Yeah, no, it makes a lot of sense. And so, you know, we've talked a lot of our guests have talked about the importance of partnerships, and we've already been discussing partnerships and collaboration in this conversation. But I mean, especially as you look forward to all of these challenges with this transition, are there any other kind of partnerships that really you foresee APS joining forces with to help you, and maybe it kind of provides some advice to others listening elsewhere in the country? Like, just talk about maybe partnerships we might not be familiar that you have.
Yeah, Dominic, I think we talked about the Take Charge AZ. That really is a partnership with, in many cases, our municipalities, some of our customers who are looking to bring charging opportunities. So I think that's a good example. There are, I think, many, many partnership opportunities with our customers just writ large. And I'll share one that I think is a really good example, and it shows the power of technology. We have what's called our Cool Rewards program, where we deploy smart thermostats and customers sign up to get a bill credit in order to allow us to control their thermostats a limited number of days a year for a limited period of time. So it's those really hot days when the power demand is really high And, you know, we're trying to manage having to go out in the market, or the market may not be there because the region is just very tight. Mm-hmm. We could not do that without the smart metering technology that we've deployed. So we have essentially all of our customers on smart meters, which allow us to be able to do that kind of telemetry back to their thermostat. We could not have done that without partnering with folks like Honeywell and Nest and the thermostat manufacturers to enable that technology. And we couldn't do it without our customers saying, I'm willing to sign up. And the really cool thing about it, in terms of being invisible to the customers, when we have large numbers of customers participating, when you get up into the 100,000, you know, range of customers, if I signed up for that program, but I'm having a party and I really don't want my thermostat going up 2 or 3 degrees, no worries, turn it back down. We know that the average customer, and we kind of can even do the math, the econometric work to know that we're going to get this many megawatts when we call that program, even recognizing that individual customers for their own solutions may opt out. Hmm. So it really becomes the type of partnership or opportunity where a customer will, you could override it every single time, we're still going to pay it, because on average, we know what the response is going to look like, and most customers are fine with it.
Such a great big data story, right? You look at the collective and you can make better decisions because you see the full picture and you can help optimize where individual choice would lead to a suboptimal outcome.
Yeah, awesome. You know, the first one of these programs was actually, I think, in Texas, and they hardwired like breakers onto air conditioner units so that they would, like, you know, force the customer off.
It's kind of like in the school district where you can't turn it, and you have to have a person come in and change it. And it's like, right. It's so hot and people are dying. Oh, wow. All right. So,
yeah, so now, you know, now we do that all just voluntarily, and same thing on the commercial side. There's a lot.
And you still pay even if they switch it. It's great. Let's hope they're not taking advantage of it. But, so you're almost 3 years into the clean energy commitment that you made back in 2020 to get to 100% clean carbon-free energy by 2050. Tell us about the progress and what this bold goal means for Arizona. You alluded to it in the beginning. Can't wait to hear more about this.
Yeah, the 2050 is a long way away. So we wanted to set interim targets too. So we've got specific goals that we want to achieve in both renewable energy and clean. One of the keys to our success to getting to 100% clean is the continued efficient operation of Palo Verde, because again, it's one of our largest assets, and it's 100% clean, and we're going to need to continue that. It right now goes through 2045. We'll relicense it, we hope, and be able to continue with that. But we've been out in the procurement space now doing these all source RFPs that I talked about. I think we've just signed now over 1500 megawatts of new solar, wind, and storage. Mm-hmm. One of the key challenges and opportunities that we're pursuing is looking at how energy storage, which right now is really lithium ion, large scale lithium ion batteries, play into the system and allow us to store energy really just from one part of the day to into the evening. So it's short-term storage. So we're making progress on that. Our customers continue to be very robust adopters of rooftop solar. We're pushing on 150,000. We're 140-some thousand customers right now with rooftop solar. Which again is a great contributor. It's 1,300 megawatts probably of supply that we have. And so we're going to get it with a combination of our customers taking action like that, us pursuing on the utility side, looking at the efficiency side, so the demand side, how do we continue to make investments to manage demand so that we can continue to add resources in an efficient way. I think we're making good progress. It is a very tight power market here in the West, and so we're looking at how we can manage not just the transition to clean, but balance that with affordability, reliability, and then a good customer experience.
Awesome. Well, yeah, 28 years to make it happen. Good. It's glad that we didn't hear it. Well, in 2049, we'll really kick it up. But
that's not a plan.
Well, you know, we do have a lot of our listeners that, work for cities. And so I know you said earlier you partner heavily with municipalities, but how should city administration be thinking about their power needs? And what advice do you have maybe for those that are working with some of the ones, utilities that don't have growth mindsets? How should they be preparing for a smarter future from their power needs?
Yeah, and you know, you should have a good or at least working relationship with your utility, because we all, I think, have developed good relationships in having to site power lines. Just, you know, putting a power line through a city is a challenging thing to do. And so, you know, usually the teams get pretty good at figuring out we need to go ahead in the urban planning process and get in there early before you've built it all in, and then go in and put the power lines. And so hopefully you've got those good relationships. It's really, I think, taking that, the opportunity to say there's more than just what you might think about how do I coordinate street cuts or how do I coordinate the building of new power lines, but, you know, how do I manage my energy load? What does solar opportunities look like for me? Are there, if, you know, the city of Phoenix here has their own decarbonization plans, they want to work with us closely on, are there things that we could be doing? And I'll give you an example that came up the other day, not with City of Phoenix necessarily, but just with another customer. When we did a solar procurement a while ago, we do this all the time. So we've got experts who do a lot of solar procurement. We know that sometimes our commercial customers or city and town customers, they're not used to going out and procuring. Mm. And so we had a customer that said, I'd like to get a chunk of some solar energy. And we said, well, just tell us how much you want and we'll add that to our existing procurement. So instead of us going out and getting a 50 megawatt solar facility, we'll go get a 60 megawatt solar facility and we'll add that 10. And that 10 megawatts more is going to come at a much cheaper cost than if you went out on your own and just got a 10 megawatt standalone solar facility. The same thing, we talked about thermal storage, which is using a home or a building to store energy by pre-cooling and then letting the thermostat go up over the peak hours. Cities have great facilities that are often time differentiated. Think about school buses and electric school buses. Man, what a perfect system. You can charge that school bus up in the morning, drive it around, it comes back during the middle of the day. We've got all the solar energy on the system in the middle of the day. Plug that school bus in, take advantage of that solar energy, get it back out on the road later in the day, and then come in and charge it overnight.
Love it.
And so how can we work together with school boards or with others to help support school bus electrification, you know, or other optimization of city infrastructure?
That's awesome.
Wow. Yeah. And you just got me thinking on the opportunity there. I just would have never guessed they'd be their own generation engines, but it makes sense. I knew they were electrifying for themselves, but I didn't realize they'd be generating for other parts of school. Okay, so we do have two standard questions as we kind of wrap things up. What help do you need to do more? Imagine there's someone out there listening to this and they can solve your big problem, or maybe it's someone that we think of when we hear it that we can open a door to. What kind of comes to mind to help APS do more of what you're trying to achieve?
Yeah, it's really, I think reaching out, you know, one of the coolest jobs in our company is working on our customer to grid group. Dr. Daniel Houghton leads that team for us. So he gets to do all the cool, you know, are we going to be able to plug pickups in and charge back to the grid? So vehicle to grid technology and things like that. And so, you know, just, I think, reaching out, looking for who the contacts are at the utility, sharing those ideas. You know, we do all still work as we do still operate with, I'd say, a utility mindset, in the sense that we tend to do pilots that are slower than a lot of individual people would like to go. We tend to be a little more risk adverse than the average bear. And so you get into I'd like you to be serial number one on this project. You know, that's a lot of times I think it's really, hey, here's something that's been working great in like the oil and gas industry. Have you thought about maybe applying it over here in the electric industry in terms of AI or analytics or optimization? But I think just that reach out, IEI is a good resource. So the Edison Electric Institute, the Institute for Electric Innovation, is a great place to just sort of say, hey, is there a utility I'd like to do, or that I'd like to kind of do this? Is this better in the Southwest or in the Northeast, or, or something like that. IEI is pretty easy to find on the web. Lisa Wood is the director over there, but it really is just find the opportunity to reach out and then do the trade kind of things. There's big trade stuff that our industry does, distribute tech, trade show, you know, the solar trade shows, just being present there. I've made a number of connections just walking around in a conference and connect with somebody. And then we end up having a meeting back here and we say, hey, that's kind of a cool idea. Let's pull the thread on it and see if there's something.
Dom and I have been known to have those side conversations for sure, whether it's over coffee or a beer. Those are some of the best. Our final question, and it can obviously be in your industry if you think, but as you've gotten to know us and the Urban Complex, is there anyone that you're particularly appreciative of, like to recognize here on the show? But selfishly for us, if you think they'd be a great guest, we'd love to know that too.
Yeah, I think, you know, I mentioned Lisa Wood. I think that just from understanding the customer side of that technology, she and her team is really doing a tremendous amount of work. On the more broad standpoint, you know, Sandra, it'd be talk about that growth and kind of how we see Arizona. And, you know, Sandra Watson would be a great guest.
Absolutely.
Okay, well, Jeff, with that, the Urban Complex gives a big note of thanks to you, our guest, Jeff Goldner, CEO of Arizona Public Service. Thanks for joining us today.
Thanks, guys.
Thanks, Jeff.
Support for this episode of the Urban Complex comes from MST.
MST is a Salesforce certified integrator. We work on building customer experience solutions and deploy them for our customers. As we started evolving, our why also continue to evolve as a company. Over the last 3 years, the whole approach was really revolving around what we call 3 C's, which is customers, colleagues, and community.
All right, Dom, that was Jeff with APS. What'd you think?
Yeah, well, brilliant, brilliant mind. I mean, you can tell why he's really changed the game since coming into APS. Again, that the thought of how innovative he is, how he thinks, the growth mindset, he knows his stuff. That was such a great conversation. We picked up so many great points we were just discussing. But I mean, two awesome things really stood out to me. And I think you know what I'm going to talk about. It's one, it's that idea around collaboration. I think for some reason in the past, utilities were kind of looked at as these monoliths that didn't really care about the community or weren't real willing to collaborate with industry or their city.
Well, they knew their lane. They stayed in their lane. That's the thing, right? That's what the growth mindset was.
Until it seemed like, you know, they were just this thing that was there that never really participated in any of these activities. But look, you saw when we talked about collaboration, his eyes lit up. He was passionate about it. You could tell that this was a proactive strategy for them as utility companies getting out there and collaborating with as many partners as they possibly can. And what did he say that now that we're talking about it?
I heard two things that was kind of like, here's my problem. I love your perspective, or bring me your problem. We'd love to contribute. I thought just the way he started with that is part of their growth mindset. That wasn't what I was expecting, but you're right. That's customer centricity right there.
Heck yeah. That approach of, I want to invite people to my problem, which is such a mindset you don't hear a lot about it. But, and then how he's using that to like guide himself into RFPs or new ways to procure technology, right? Not just, we'll develop the requirements, put out the RFP, and then we'll see what happens.
No, it's negotiate it down by pennies.
Right. Yeah. No, it's just brilliant. So that idea of collaboration, it completely shattered the glass for me, because there's a utility proactively saying, no, we want to be phenomenal partners with our communities, with our businesses.
Even with SRP, who's, by the way, the local party in the greater Phoenix Valley. Totally. And they're playing well in the sandbox.
Yep. Yeah. So that idea of collaboration. So I think what a great piece of advice for mayor, city manager, smart city directors listening around the country. Look, your utility probably wants to collaborate. Maybe they just don't know how. So maybe reach out and try to build that relationship with them, because it seems like there's a lot of people like Jeff out there looking to do good stuff. The next big thing I want to touch on is that idea around the smart thermostats, right? Leveraging technology and big data to really help solve a challenge around, you know, energy usage and consumption during peak hours. I mean, what a brilliant way. And then how to actually do it in a way that engages the community, engages the individuals, and say, instead of just putting that kill switch in that they did in Texas, you know, actually having an engagement process with the citizens and businesses and letting them know this is how it's going to work. And look, you can even decide to turn it back down if you want to, but this is going to help us and really just
leverage. Still pay them and not penalize them because they had some personal thing, as long as they're not taking advantage of it. I thought that was
it's
great.
Leveraging technology. I mean, I can just start to see where that can go and the innovation that can happen from that. You know, what I would have loved to ask, and maybe I can follow up with them after, is, you know, to me, there's a big equity play there too. You know, how can we maybe start to put those smart thermostats in low-income individuals' homes? Because a lot of times, especially nowadays, when kids and students had to go home and everyone's plugging in a laptop if they had it and start, you know, trying to work from home, do homework from home, guess what? Energy's bills increased, right? And so how might we be able to leverage that smart technology to also address the equity gap with energy? So
I'm sure he'd be open. You heard him when he was talking about electronic vehicles and the charging. They're already considering equity in placements, right? I think it's on their minds.
Yeah, so lots of great stuff there. I just love that idea of really working together with the end customer to help solve an energy challenge. What about you? What did you take away from that?
Well, you highlighted two of the ones I would have jumped to. I just think, though, his approach just is pervasive. You talked about the tech, and like you can only imagine working with a local provider. Honeywell has a big facility here, although the group they worked with is probably based in Minneapolis. But having the ability and the foresight to work with a tech partner, there's no way they could develop their own tech for that. And so it just shows you, or the way by which they approached economic development in a collaborative mode. And you heard them time and again say, well, utilities like to go in and lead with what they know and stay in their lane, but they only get so far. But look at that Taiwan Semi example. I mean, that's one of the biggest economic development deals of the United States' history, and like it's a massive deal, and they had to be part of it. They had to do the planning. They had to help solve their operation cycles, and so that took a lot of planning and involvement. And that's the type of stuff that wins a deal. So again, I thought the planning, the integration, the collaboration side was really great.
Keep going.
I also thought that just his response to a smart city was great in just this way that it's a system, and it's a system of systems. And it's so, and like, you know, you look at this, right? You know, you live within three of everything, drug stores, grocery stores, and the way by which they're operating, and they have these concentric circles, and they're making our lives more efficient, but they're still thriving even with all the Grubhubs and the Uber Eats and the delivery, because they're all getting smarter and they're finding niches to grow. And that's just one example of these systems of systems. I just thought the way by which he's approaching, you can tell he's really thinking customer centric. Where do we fit? How is our network changing? How are the other networks changing? How can we get involved in that? It's pervasive in the growth mindset, it's pervasive in their partnership approach. I just thought that his definition was one of the most unique ones too.
Yeah, that's exactly the question I was going to ask you. I said, what do you think about that approach, the systems approach? You know, to channel the Dr. Crow episode, I think he's right. I think if you're in the smart city space or just the city space, and you're not viewing the city as a system, or, you know,
watch out, you're going to be
get out, right? Right. Because you're right. Everything's interconnected. I mean, think about it. Your utility grid is on top of your transportation grid, which is on top of your, you know, connectivity grid, which is, you know, it can go on and on.
To that point, if your organization doesn't have a growth mindset, you're going to find yourself in stasis and whatever. So you should be trying to apply growth mindset to your city, to your city administration, to your leadership, to your teams. How do you look at the customer differently as a customer, not just a resident that serves and transacts? We've talked about that a few times.
Absolutely. And it goes back to, I think, something we talked about one of the first episodes is, you know, eventually do cities change the entire organizational structure and get out of the department system, right? Because that just generates silos and get into more of a system structure. But what a fascinating conversation. Great guy. Really look forward to driving more conversations and innovation with him here. But ultimately, wonderful conversation. Awesome. So moving to cracks in the pavement, what do you have for us this week, Chris?
Well, we'll do a quick one, but we heard about their 2050 program for 100% clean. Here's one, and he also referenced transportation a few times. This title is U.S. Transportation Sector Could Cut Carbon Emissions 34% by 2030. And it just kind of highlights how regulation, how all the focus, how the pressures, whether it's things that the cities run or centrally run, but also the individuals, and how they're going to push. So Looks like federal is still going to put tax credits towards purchase of EV. So that's still going to be there. There's going to be some mandates of vehicle mandates on zero emissions targets. But then there's also a lot of research. I know ASU will love this. More research. How do you develop alternate fuels? How do you decarbonize the power grid? And we heard a lot of that today in what Jeff was talking about with APS. So anything stick out for you?
It just goes back to his conversation, his points around collaboration. I mean, it says the administration's carbon reduction program requires states develop carbon reduction strategies in consultation with metropolitan planning organizations, right? Your regional transportation programs. But also, my guess is with the utilities as well, right?
They better be partnering with the utilities and they better be planning for it for sure.
Exactly. And so it just goes to show you that, look, if the federal level is kind of putting these mandates down, these requirements down, be proactive. You know, right. Just because it says, you have to partner with your MPO, well, go partner with utility, go partner with your tech companies like TSMC and Intel and figure out how you can do that together, because it's only through collaboration you're going to probably achieve some of those big time goals.
The other thing I see from the article that makes me think of Jeff's overview is there's a bullet about congestion pricing and travel demand strategies. And I think my advice, if anyone's following this, be open like they did with their in-home metering, where it's a flexible program. Don't go in with the hardwire solution for your, go in with an easy solution. So you get the data, you can optimize the data and make it customer centric. I think it's a lesson learned if they're going to be doing the peak.
100%. Yeah. Think about customer engagement, right?
Yeah. Right on.
That's great.
All right. Awesome. Well, thanks for joining us, everyone. That's a wrap. We'll see you next time.
Yeah.
Thanks for listening to The Urban Complex, smarter cities for a stronger tomorrow. Please find us on where you listen, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or YouTube. We do love your feedback. Let us know if you have ideas for guests or questions to air on Cracks in the Pavement via social media. The Urban Complex is found on LinkedIn, Facebook, and Twitter. Or just shoot me an email, chris@theurbancomplex.com. Until next time.